short ball, flapping moose back and full scarcely past square leg. So this is cricket.
Victory to the Australians by 8 wickets.
Welcome to episode 2 of the Summer of Cricket with Straubs and Schnoo. Yes, that's right. We're back for a second crack. 250 plus downloads in the first episode. So I'm as surprised as anyone. Cannot be unhappy with that. Welcome once again, of course, to my co-host, Vishnu. Schnoo, how are you this evening?
I'm great, thanks, Straubs. Yeah, 248 other people could be bothered to listen to our ramblings on cricket, which was really great.
It's a scary
Thank
prospect.
Thank you to all of them.
It's a scary prospect, isn't it? I know we can at least count on 251 next week if we don't lose anyone, because my mum hasn't listened to the first episode yet, so...
Yeah, I don't think my parents have either.
You got to get on to them. There's three listeners right there, you know?
Yeah. I should be able to coerce my sister and my brother-in-law as well.
Well, I'm thinking my sister just gave birth to my very first niece, so she's going to have a lot of late nights. I'm thinking a bit of late-night podcast company won't go astray there, so maybe one or two extra downloads there as well.
But she'll probably have listened to your voice for long enough.
She's probably sick of it, you're right. She's
sick of you already.
Right? Well, she knows how important I'm going to be at making sure my niece has a love of cricket, so I'm hoping to swing that angle, but we'll try
our luck. Get them started early.
Oh, yeah, never too early. I've already bought her a little cricket bat, so she's a week old tomorrow. She's already got a cricket bat, so you're never too young.
Southern Star.
Yeah, I'm thinking a Southern Star. Get her along in the mould of Meg Lanning and Elise Perry and all them will be fantastic. But look, the first test series of the summer is over. It sounds a bit funny, two separate test series across the summer, but three tests against the South Africans. Went down 2-1 overall, but ended on a high in Adelaide. What are your thoughts overall on the first test series of the summer?
Well, the first test series of the spring. Summer starts day after tomorrow, mate.
You're right. Well, that's technically true, yeah, but we're not the spring / summer of cricket with Straubs and Schnoo.
Yeah.
I'm sort of trying to push some branding,
yeah, of course.
Maybe.
But yeah, it's been an interesting series. I was really looking forward to watching AB de Villiers and Dale Steyn in what I thought may be their last tour. And we saw Dale Steyn for half of the first day and didn't see de Villiers at all. But other than that, it's been a pretty entertaining three tests. Obviously, as an Australian fan, not the greatest of performances or results in the first two test matches, but certainly some shoots of growth in Adelaide and another pretty impressive, entertaining performance for the day-night test match.
Absolutely. It's one of those things that's quickly become almost par for the course. We've got the day-night test match in Adelaide, and I know we're going to have another one across the summer in Brisbane when we take on New Zealand a little bit later. Sorry,
yeah.
Pakistan a little bit later. New Zealand in one day, of course. Happy to get the win. We spoke going in about looking for the little things, and we were pretty keen to see how some of the younger guys who came into the squad would perform. Overall, I thought it was it just seemed like a more fresh outfit, the Australian side. It seemed a little bit reinvigorated,
more energy,
almost.
Certainly.
Yeah, absolutely. And in all sort of phases of the game, batting, bowling, fielding, the talk seemed up. And I don't know whether the talk in the field was just purely down to Matty Wade and the 455,000 nice Garys that we heard across the our time at the bowling crease. But the energy certainly seemed lifted. And I think it benefited guys like Khawaja as well, obviously promoted to open the batting after a little bit of a sly play by Faf in the first innings with the declaration and David Warner not being able to open the batting. But Khawaja and Renshaw came out. Renshaw only made the 10 off 62 balls.
Did his job.
But some promising signs. Some promising signs,
yeah. I batted 44 overs on the weekend and scored 22. So I did half a Khawaja and half a Renshaw. But, yeah, Renshaw's been, I think, overanalyzed a little bit this first test with the amount of balls he faced. You know, obviously we've grown up watching Langer, Hayden, Slater, all of these guys, you know, take 5 or 10 balls, if that, to get themselves set and then go for it, and really dominate. But yeah, the bowling has really tightened up against the Aussies here at home in home tests. And yeah, Renshaw and Khawaja both really had to fight it out and tough it out, and I thought it was really good.
Absolutely, and I think one of the key points for Renshaw was finishing not out in that second innings, chasing a relatively small total. There's not a lot of benefit there for most batsmen. You really can only get a 30 or 40. You're not going to be able to score 100. You're not really going to be able to go on and do anything of significance. But in just your second innings, not out. Finish 34 off 137 balls in 167 minutes. So that strike rate certainly wasn't through the roof. And what got me a little bit, there seemed to be a lot of criticism from the Channel 9 commentators. And it's probably one of the few moments over the summer where I've actually had the commentary on in the Channel 9 cricket and wasn't listening to the ABC grandstand guys. But all of a sudden they were saying he needed to do more and he needed to be more flamboyant. And I thought, that's completely at odds with everything that's been said coming into this test. Did that strike
they
you?
They have very, very, very short memories. I wonder if they would have been so kind if Renshaw had done a Warner and gone first ball after a nice wide one outside off stump and nicked it to first or second slip. I don't think they would have been backing him. But I think Chris Rogers on ABC, which I was listening to, he had a really good point in regards to a very small but significant technical flaw that he's picked up in regards to Renshaw's footwork. And I think that is going to affect the way he plays in the future and how effective he is. But, you know, for now, and certainly for the next three test matches, I think we've got to back him in. And I think he'll get rid of that that technical flaw pretty quickly once he realizes you know, how to overcome it. Because obviously he's not going to face bowlers like Philander and Kyle Abbott every day. And of course Pakistan have got some decent swing bowlers, Mohammad Amir, probably the pick of them. But yeah, I give him a couple of years, and he'll straighten that out pretty quickly.
I think you're right, Nat. I think looking at him play, the word that came to mind for me was raw. Now, it's a guy, I think he only had 12 first-class matches coming in, has some great performances and some good scores in those games, but he's not a kid who's played a lot of cricket at a high level. So he does look very raw. We had a little bit of a chat, just in instant messaging on Facebook, during the test, and we sort of come to the conclusion, he reminded me a lot of a young Matthew Elliott before, as you rightly said, before he went over to county cricket and really refined his technique. He looked a little bit ungainly. He's tall. He's all limbs. He almost looks like he's the baby horse, just sort of the pony, foal, just sort of learning to gallop. The foal, exactly. To gallop
for a guy of that height, and as you know, we cricketers and golfers like to say, you know, a person with that kind of leverage through the limbs, he doesn't really seem to make use of it yet. Like, he doesn't stand tall and strong when he defends. And he does seem to move quite late to get his body behind the ball. So it kind of makes him look less solid than he probably thinks he is. And I think that is one thing that he will have to work on, because at that level, and even in junior levels of cricket, you don't want to give bowlers and fielders and, you know, chirpy slips fielders any sign of weakness or let them perceive any deficiency. And he's got to get much more confident leaving the ball. Like, you know, the great days of Hayden and Ponting, where they'll take this massive stride down the wicket and leave a ball, you know, fourth and a half, fifth stump, with supreme confidence. And even Michael Hussey, they'll do that. And the bowlers are like, well, okay, I can't even put it there. For anyone else, for a ball just passing outside off stump, fourth stump, just going over off stump, batsmen kind of get worried when they leave that. But those greats would give the bowler no confidence with such a confident leave. Whereas Renshaw, taking a half stride down the wicket, putting his bat there just to kind of cover the off stump line. He knows the ball is swinging away, you're not going to hit the stumps. So he's not expecting to actually need to use his bat, but I think it's sending the wrong signals to the opposition. And I think it's one thing that the dominant Aussies who are now in the commentary box are almost picking up on from their days of being in the slips cordons. Seeing a batsman do that would obviously get them, get their spirits up if they were the bowling side.
Yeah, absolutely. Certainly raises the red flag
for
the fielders, and particularly in such a hostile, a hostile series on the field. I think there's been plenty said about the decent spirit off the field between the two sides, but plenty of hostile moments leading in. In terms of the other debutants, Peter Hanscom and Nick Maddison, probably didn't get to see enough of Nick Maddison, which may cost him moving forward, but a nice half century for Peter Hanscom.
Yeah,
it's the
first time I've really seen Hanscom bat live. And it was really that first little session before he really got going. I was actually really quite impressed. He didn't, start off, if you look at his highlights, it probably doesn't even show the first half hour. Probably just shows those beautiful late cuts, cut shots and pulls. But he really toughed it out, and that's something I think will be really quite useful going forward. Maddison, I think, got, I wouldn't say deer in the headlights, but certainly didn't look as though he liked the pink ball in the evening session. And, every batsman can sometimes get an in-swing in New Yorker and can't do much about it at whatever level. So he's a bit unlucky, and I hope they persist with him, but there's rumours that Sean Marsh is coming back.
Yeah, which will be interesting to see. Sean Marsh, certainly someone who maybe showed some glimpses of form coming in, but has certainly been a very divisive figure amongst a number of people. I thought Maddison, it was almost the perfect storm that worked against him. It was a terrible time to come out and bat. The conditions were really favouring the bowlers for one of the few times across that period of play. And as you said, he copped a fantastic ball from Rabada. So I'm sort of in the same camp. I'd like to see them persist with him. But it'll be interesting to see. Looking ahead, we do have a three-match ODI series against the Kiwis coming up throughout early December, 4th, 6th and 9th of December in Sydney, Canberra and Melbourne. So Sydney for myself, yep. Canberra for you, and then, of course, for Melbourne. So that should be quite good. Looking at the squad for the ODIs, obviously Steve Smith, captain, David Warner, the vice-captain, George Bailey, Hilton Cartwright, Pat Cummins, James Faulkner, Aaron Finch, Travis Head, Josh Hazlewood, Mitch Marsh, Glenn Maxwell, Mitchell Stark, Matthew Wade and Adam Zampa. What are your thoughts looking ahead to the three-match ODI series?
Zampa's interesting, putting him in there ahead of old GOAT. But, that looks like a very kind of stock-standard ODI squad. Hilton Cartwright, whose spot is he taking? Probably Mitch.
He's almost come in for...
Mitchell Marsh is...
Mitch Marsh is in there as well. There is some... I mean, even Travis Head has sort of come
recently,
in...
Recently, yeah.
...as well. To me, it's interesting. I don't mind the look of young Hilton Cartwright over at WA. A bit of an all-rounder who may sort of slot into that Mitch Marsh role in the ODI side if the selectors don't opt to persist with him. I'm happy to see Pat Cummins back as well.
Actually, having a look through that, there's no Usman Khawaja in there. So who would open the batting?
I think it's got to be Warner and Finch, doesn't it?
Warner and Finch. Bailey at three, maybe Glenn Maxwell. Steve Smith.
Perhaps even Steve Smith, if you could move Steve
Smith
up the order, I guess.
Yeah, we might have a lot of all-rounders in that squad. Well, in that in the 11 as well.
Yeah, it's potentially one of those sides that we might be able to bat very deep with. If we can get enough bowling out of our all-rounders, out of our Faulkners and Cartwrights, Marshes, Maxwells, we may be able to sort of look at slotting that extra batsman in. But I think that the biggest thing that comes out of that squad is probably a little bit of versatility.
I'm looking forward to Pat Cummins.
It's one of those sides where you could probably... Yeah, I'm ecstatic that Pat's back. Not only a New South Welshman, but a Penrith Panther as well.
local boy. He's
torn it up for the Summer Panthers. We've produced a few. Get down to Howl Oval and watch Pat Cummins and Josh Layla tear up, as well as the young Bertos boys, the local boys. It's a fantastic afternoon of cricket at Howl Oval, right on the right on Mulgoa Road. It gets that suburban cricket feeling at its very best. But I almost find it hard to get excited about a three-match ODI series that's sort of just wedged in between six test matches.
It does seem very strange timing. Like, I don't see why they couldn't have done this in the middle of Jan. Like, obviously, we'll have a tri-series as well, but like really, three ODIs takes less than a week. It does seem strange scheduling to break up the rhythm for Steve Smith, David Warner, and Hazelwood. I think.
Yeah, I mean, the interesting thing for me as well, we come out of the tests with an ODI series, as you said, against Pakistan and New Zealand again, and then we sort of finish off the home summer in mid to late February with T20s against Sri Lanka out of nowhere.
I think this 4-year planning ahead thing, future tours or whatever it's called, I think it's coming to the end of that kind of 4-year cycle where they have to put in their allotted number of games against each opponent. So they're just kind of trying to cram them in.
That's probably a fair shout.
Yeah.
So yeah, look,
it's going to be interesting. Yeah,
pretty keen with that coming out of. Yeah, looking forward. There's obviously injury concerns as well, particularly with
it's
David
Warner.
It's
a very strange shoulder injury. But I've had my own kind of shoulder problems through overuse in cricket and tennis and swimming and a whole bunch of other things. But for a guy who's a professional athlete who doesn't do much else but cricket and probably quite a lot of gym work. And he's recognised as probably one of Australia's best fielders. Throwing his shoulder out in the field does seem quite strange.
I think you're underestimating the impact of lifting the arm up and down to change channels on the new OLED TV.
Oh, not you as well, mate. Oh, come on. Yeah.
And I'm kind of annoyed because I looked at one of those TVs. I looked at one of those TVs recently. I've been looking at a new telly and I was like, I like it. And I sort of thought to myself, the definition does look awesome. And then third time I saw that ad, I started thinking, even if this was the best TV and the cheapest TV in the world, I can't buy it because of this ad. It's starting to annoy the living daylights out of me. It's one of those ads. And you get those ads, especially during test match cricket, where you'll get them 15 times a day. And it just, like, on the radio during the Ashes series, we had the Demand a Commander ad.
I don't even know what just,
it is. Yeah, I don't even know what like a Commander is.
Telecom company or something, isn't it?
It's like a business phone setup or something, but I thought if I hear Demand a Commander one more time, I'm going to demand I put someone's head through a wall because it's starting to get too much, and the OLED TV is going going the same way. But I'll keep my TV advertisement based aggression in check for the moment.
It is LG.
I do
want
to talk. That's the thing. I'm not even sure. I just remember the OLED bit. Well, if they want to sponsor me down. Us, we'll just, certainly be. I don't even know anymore.
All for them in the future, but yeah, no free advertising.
Oh well, I've got no problem selling my soul out whatsoever. I've got no problem selling my soul out whatsoever. But until such a time as things change,
yep.
Say no to the OLEDs. Now we do have here. We have the Southern Stars, yep. Who are currently playing. Big clash against South Africa. Australia set 9 for 260 in their 50 overs. South Africa 8 for 201 at present. So this will obviously be over by the time the podcast is out. Only 4 overs remaining. But it's been a good summer so far.
I went to see them play their first ODI here in Canberra. And that was one hell of a ripper of the game. Went down to last over with Elise Perry, I think scoring 94 to win the game for the Southern Stars. And it's been close for all the games since that as well, including a tie yesterday or day before yesterday, where they got a wicket off the last ball to tie the scores and tie the game. It's been brilliant, but the Southern Stars have pretty much wiped the floor with them.
Yeah, it's not something you see a lot of the old tie in one day cricket, but the Stars and obviously on the back of professionalism in the women's game, it's great to see that the results are taking a stride along with that professionalism.
And they've actually found probably a better way than the men's team to rotate the squad and give younger players a exposure against a decent team and, rotate things around and continue to win.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. It's great to see. And we'll obviously do our best moving forward to really, really give the women's game its due. We'll look to be doing the same with Shield cricket. Obviously, some big Shield games wrapping
Peter
up
Neville,
today. Victoria.
Peter Neville just going to town for New South Wales.
Yeah, to no avail, unfortunately. But there's no better response to getting dumped from the test side than an undefeated 179. The Blues first innings 5 declared for 495. 115 from Moses Enriquez as well, which is great to see. His batting's probably been the thing that's let him down moving to the next level. So if he can come in at 4 and score 100 or score consistently, that'll be interesting to see. But overall, a draw for the Blues down in Tassie at Blundstone, my second favourite place to watch cricket in the world, down in Bellerive. The Blues declared, as I said, 5 for 495.
Yep,
rolled Tassie
for
209. Came out, declared 1. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Great keeping as well. Declared 1 for 128 in the next dig. And Tassie held on, 4 for 266. And a big performance from your man, Jimmy Faulkner.
I don't know where the selectors see his test match career, whether he's on the radar or not. But certainly with the tour of India coming up and the Ashes a year away, I think he really should be putting pressure on Mitch Marsh for that all-rounder spot, as I was saying last week. But
yeah, absolutely.
Depends.
Yeah, absolutely. It's certainly hard to argue there. Moving around at the MCG, your boys, the Bush Rangers, with a 5-wicket win over the Redbacks. This is an interesting game, too. The Redbacks posted 405 with big performances from Travis Head, who got 130, and Tom Cooper, 97. The Vicks got 367 in reply, 100 from Aaron Finch and 80 from young Harper. Yep. The Redbacks came back out, rolled for 162. Travis Head, really, the only resistance with 52. And the Vicks wrapped it up, 5 for 201, with Cam White not out 40 at the end.
Yep.
So, big win for the Vicks.
A close game by Shield standards as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's not often you'd lose outright after posting a 400-plus score in the first dig either. You're not going to see that a lot, particularly in four-day cricket. You're certainly not going to see that all that often. Anyone sort of catch your eye out of that one?
To be perfectly honest, no. Because, like, obviously Zampa bowling, you know, it's good to see him get overs and get a couple of wickets. But 24 overs, 2 wickets, 2 for 102 is not that impressive. And certainly with the bat, other than Travis Head, who we kind of already know about. And I suppose he's, you know, the next man in line in terms of, you know, that prime generation for the test side. You know, no one else has really done anything. Harris is probably the man to watch in terms of potential top order batting. But obviously he didn't have an outstanding game like he did last round.
Absolutely.
And I still think Cameron White's probably the best captain in Australia.
Look, it's hard to argue. It's hard to argue. He certainly seems like he can captain sides to victory. He seems to be able to really do more than your average captain, which it's hard to argue with. He's done it so consistently for such a long time now. He's certainly a leader.
Time for the non-playing captain, like the days of under 12s and under 11s when captain coach would be at square leg telling which bowler to bowl, which fielder to move, and what the batsman should be looking to do.
Hey, if we lose the test series to Pakistan, I'm not adverse to that.
Yeah.
I'm not adverse to that at all. Just the other Shield game, Queensland wrapped up a victory by 97 runs at home up at Tony Island Stadium in Townsville. So not at the Gabba, but dominant first innings, 422 on the board for the Bulls. Joe Burns, 68. Young Wildermuth, 93. And Michael Knees are deep with 68. Western Australia, 6 for 340 in reply. Bancroft, 103. Hilton Cartwright, 84. Ashton Turner, not out, 49. The Bulls replied, 6 for 252. No one of real note. And Chris Hartley with 53. But they rolled West Australia for 237. The only real fight coming from Michael Klinger, 65. Johnny Wells, 47. Ashton Turner again, 49. But a pretty comfortable victory for the Bulls on home soil, if not traditional home soil,
I think
anyway.
Bancroft really has to step it up. Especially under pressure. Like that last Shield round, you know, the bat off. That happened after the Hobart spill. He didn't do much there when the pressure was on. I think, you know, from being on the verge and then kind of crumbling under pressure almost, the pressure, I suppose, expectation, getting so close, he's got to, you know, obviously he's still only 24, so he's got time on his side. But, I think he needs to step it up. Is he still wicket-keeping? Do you know?
I'm not 100% sure off the top of my head. I think Sam Whiteman might be for WA. Don't quote me on that, but I have it in my head.
Yeah,
that Sam Whiteman
you're right. Whiteman was keeping there. What do you think of this Labuschagne? I don't even know if I've pronounced his name right there.
I know. I've got a fair idea that I'm going to stuff his name up when I try and pronounce it.
Well, how about we just call him Manus?
Manus. It's got to be South African descent.
Yep. Yep.
Manus. Let's go with Manus. Yep. Big Labs. Born in South Africa, we've called it, 1994. Only young. 16 first-class games. High score of 112. Averages 33.27.
Where are you reading that from? I'm on Crick Info and it says he's... you're right. Average 33.27. not great, but how long's he been playing at Queensland for? Maybe a year and a half?
I better say, I vaguely remember him in some in a performance late last summer. Because I remember remarking on the name, but he's not someone I've spent a great deal of time looking at. I must admit, he's probably worth a look at. 79 in the first innings, coming in at first drop, and 35 in the second dig. So as you said, 33 not a terrific average, but managed to grab some hundreds and 650s in 16 first class matches. He's got some runs in him by the look of it, but probably one to keep an eye on. South African born as well, so. It'll be he made his debut. There you go. He made his debut against South Australia in Adelaide in October, November 2014.
Okay, so he's been around a little while. That's interesting.
Yeah, hasn't sort of come up too much on my radar, but he might be well worth. And there's a few guys up at Queensland at the moment. They're sort of producing a decent raft of youngsters that are coming in and taking that. The sort of next role. So Queensland might be one of those teams that's worth watching in the next sort of two or three summers as to who's coming through, I think.
That's certainly true.
Anyway, looking forward, you wanted to talk a little bit about
India
versus
England? Yeah, I think
England
are kind of getting their... I don't know, are we allowed to swear on this podcast? I'm not sure.
We may as well. I'll tell you what. Swear, I'll think about it.
Well, they're pretty much getting their asses handed to them. The shit kicked out of them. Put it any way you want, but they are getting completely outplayed. So much so, I would say it's almost embarrassing. Like, they're putting up, you know, they're not getting, you know, rolled over like the Aussies have been. But for all the talk of... improving and, you know, lifting their game and doing this, that and the other. They're really being outplayed, especially with the bat.
Absolutely. Well, just bringing up the scorecard from the third test at the Punjab Cricket Association, Bindra Stadium in Mohali. Rolled for 283. India responded with 417. England again rolled for 236 and India 2 for 104 in 20 overs for an 8-wicket victory. That's about as comprehensive as Test cricket gets.
The funny, strange thing, I suppose you could say, India's first innings with the bat, they lost, what was it? The chunk of their runs came from the lower order. So Ashwin 72, Jadeja 90, Yadav 55. Any bowling unit that allows, 160, 220, almost 250 runs from the tail end has got some problems.
Big concerns when you look at the bowling performance of the Pommies in that innings too. Jimmy Anderson, 21 overs, none for 48. Wokes, 24 overs, none for 86. Moeen Ali, 13 overs, none for 33. Gareth Batty bowled 16 overs, none for 47. The wickets were divvied up completely between Stokes with 5 for 73 and Adil Rashid, 4 for 118. So not a lot of impact from the opening bowlers.
No broad,
either.
No hope.
It's interesting to sort of think like that too. Consider when you think of sort of the up and down nature of his performance, particularly early on, how crucial he's become to that side.
And even the second innings as well, they've gone at 5.1 and over chasing that down. And if you consider, you know, Indian pitches are kind of known to be low, slow turners, you know. Going, you know, conceding at 5 and over almost takes some purposeful bad bowling, almost, I would say. Well, indisciplined,
absolutely. Well, it's hard to argue. Yeah, indiscipline's probably the best word for it. Well, as we look at wrapping up the episode, we'll have at least one of the ODIs will be done and dusted by the time we record next week. First one is this Sunday, Sydney Cricket Ground, 2:20 p.m. What are you looking for? And
looking
what
for
are
a big
thoughts?
Win. I'm looking for Finchy to score 100. Looking for Cartwright if he plays to put in a good debut performance. I think if the Kiwis can keep it close, especially for the first game, to pretty much justify the existence of this 3 one-day game series in the middle of peak Test cricket season.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, more than anything, I'll sort of be keeping an eye on the crowd. I want to see what sort of crowd the three games draw at this time of the year. I know the appetite will always be there for cricket, particularly international cricket, but it'll be interesting to see whether this sort of three-match series just jammed in the middle will attract the attention. I'd love to see young Cartwright do well. I'd like to see Australia bury New Zealand early. A big win in the first one. I think it's quite an easy series from there if we push through and get it done. But it's always nice to beat New Zealand. Doesn't matter what it's in, if it's dominoes or pick-up sticks. It's always nice to beat New Zealand. Yep. So first and foremost,
it's been a while since we've had the opportunity to beat them in soccer, rugby. Well, I suppose we thumped them in the World Cup final in the cricket. But yeah, any win over the Kiwis is always appreciated. Do we have many Kiwi listeners out of that 250?
I'll have to check it out. I know we had one, randomly we had one listener from France. So, don't know what's going on there, but welcome, bonjour. But we'll roll with it, and I'm sure as we move forward, if we do get some Kiwi listeners, they'll let us know pretty quickly when we start bagging the Kiwis moving forward.
Yeah.
They're great at that, the Kiwis. They're great at pointing out when they're upset.
It's the Poms and the Kiwis, right? So the whingers and whiners.
Yeah, they're all the same to me. Awesome. Look, guys, thank you very much for listening to episode 2 of the Summer of Cricket with Straubs and Snoo. It's been an absolute pleasure from myself.
You certainly
Straubs,
have.
I'm sure you've enjoyed it
as well.
Thanks for
listening. Thanks for downloading. And have a good week of cricket watching, playing and enjoying.
Excellent Sunday afternoon cricket. I think I might even slip down to the Sydney Cricket Ground myself and enjoy the amenities and an afternoon in the sunshine. So peace out, guys.
Bye.
Have a lovely weekend, and we'll talk next week.